USB microphones and headphones provided by CAD Audio. CAD Audio, expression through innovation.
Forgive the interruption, but I believe this requires your attention.
Meanwhile, at the above-ground underwater suborbital volcano lair...
Sergeant, we need a response team.
We're already putting together the best men. With all due respect, sir, so am I.
I have a plan. It's real!
Mighty Marvel Geeks.
That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team.
Team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos. We're a time bomb.
Well then, son, you've got a condition.
Your show about all things Marvel with Mike, Kylan, and Eric.
What a bunch of losers. I am Groot.
That I did know.
These people may be isolated, unbalanced, but I believe with the right push, we can be exactly what we need.
Suit up. I'm bringing the party to you.
I have indeed been uploaded, sir. We're online and ready.
And welcome to another episode of another issue. Excuse me, God, I think it was Tuesday for a moment. It's another issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks. I've been saying it all night, yet flub it up here. So
here, just remember, here at Mighty Marvel Geeks, we have issues.
Lots of them. We got big issues.
We definitely got a big issue this week coming at you.
Oh yes, we do.
Oh yeah. We're gonna be discussing the ending of Agent Carter. Is it the series finale, season finale? We don't know yet. So stay tuned. Well, we have our recap of that. We have our the biggest moments from it, and our thoughts based on a story of why season 3 should happen. There's also some TV news of something that's coming in 2017. Disney's opinion on what Fox has decided to do with their movies, and let's just say some Gambit news. So before we get into, and of course, we're going to have our picks of the week as well. And who knows, maybe there's some backstory.
Book club. We got to have some book club.
Yes, we are.
We did book club last week. It'd be our book of the month. So we know what book it is.
It's Ravensburg Table Incorporated.
Uncle Kylan's got a surprise for y'all, too.
It's story time with Uncle Kylan. Tell us a story.
We're going to derail. More tangents than a high school algebra class.
Don't make me break out Herbie.
Geometry, not geometry. Algebra. See, there's another reason that algebra just passed me by.
Well, see, did you have tangents in geometry, too?
Well, tangents were kind of in geometry.
There they were.
And trigonometry, especially.
Don't make me let Herbert out.
Don't you make me cuss on this radio show.
Oh, my gosh. That would just be awesome.
All right.
Oh, my word.
So, let's recap Agent Carter's Hollywood endings.
Yes, and we got the Hollywood ending that we deserve, I believe. All right, so we're dropped in, right? And then this episode hits the ground running, and so we see Frost absorbing the zero matter that's released from Wilkes at the end of last week's episode. Okay, and Wilkes is rescued by Agent Carter, and then we see the return of Tony, of Howard, and he aids in our hero's escape. Now, Thompson manages to come across the file that Masters had on Carter, and he also finds the secret council key. And so, you see him toying with it, and he manages to figure out the key, so he's smarter than I gave the man credit for, so there's that. Now, Manfredi is becoming concerned over his girlfriend's behavior. And I think he's starting to realize that the dark matter is probably not really the best thing for her. And she is just becoming obsessed with opening another rift. I mean, almost going a whole beautiful mind kind of thing with writing all these, this huge formula all on sheets of paper all over this wall. So she's starting to, try and design her own machine to open the rift herself. So Manfredi shows up back again at the Stark Mansion, and we discover that he's friends with Howard, which kind of was a jaw on the floor moment for me, but yet I wasn't really surprised either, although everybody else was. And so he comes there and he's genuinely worried about Frost. He actually loves the woman. And so he agrees to distract her while Carter and Sousa can get in and photograph the blueprints of Frost's machine, which they can get to Stark and Wilkes, which I have to admit, I love the fact that Stark admits that he gets smarter people to do his work and steals it. So I thought that was interesting. Now
that kind of ties in then with Iron Man 2.
It does, because you know they because that's what what was the guy's name?
Stilenko.
Yeah, that's what Stilenko accused Howard Stark doing. You know, and Stark admitted it, so it's all connected. So Stark and Wilkes are building this machine for themselves. And the thing is, when Sousa stopped and changed one of the numbers, I was thinking, because Frost is still trying to figure this formula out. I'm thinking, what if you just helped the woman? You know, I mean, changing it from a 6 to an 8, maybe that was the reason why her calculations were off. But I digress. So now they manage to open the new rift, and she's drawn to it. And they use the gamma cannon to knock the zero matter out of her, which, you know, she almost just looks like that she just lost the love of her life, and she's obsessed with it even as a normal human. I don't know how else to put it. She immediately gets arrested. So the zero matter goes into another dimension, and so, like I said, she's insane, and we end up seeing her in a mental asylum because she's just that far gone. You know, in fact, the scene where you see her, if you're not paying attention, you're thinking, well, how the heck did that happen? And then you see the reality, and you're like, oh. And that just kind of punches you in the gut a little bit, because as much of a villain as she is, you kind of sympathize with her, you know? But then, you know, Thompson gives Thompson gives the secret key to Carter. And Carter decides that she's going to stay in L.A. with Sousa, which we see them finally admit and express her feelings for each other. So
could Sousa be her husband?
I don't think so.
I don't think it is either. I don't know. Maybe they'll be the great mystery, because, you know, or maybe that's going to be answered in Civil War.
Okay, guys.
Yeah.
If they do that. If I understand there's a lot of fan reactions like, oh, get Sousa and Peggy together. That's not going to be that easy, because it's going against established movie canon. Because in The Winter Soldier, there is a recorded interview with Peggy, mm-hmm. and she says that her husband is one of the guys that Captain America saved on that mission where he first meets the Red Skull. The rescue mission back in First Avenger.
Oh.
It's one of the guys that gets rescued. Now, if you want to say Sousa was over there, that's one thing.
But Sousa never met Captain America either.
There were a lot of guys that got rescued. I'm sure not every one of them got to meet Steve Rogers.
That's true. Oh, that's right.
So, I mean, it's for that to happen, for that to work, Sousa had to have been over there.
Right.
I'm not saying that's out of the realm of possibility, but I am saying that's probably not, it's probably not going to happen that way.
Well, here, this is coming off Wikipedia, so take it for what it is. Daniel Sousa, a war veteran who is an agent with the SSR and experiences prejudice due to his crippled leg, allowing him to relate to Carter. He was a soldier, and he had been very active all his life. Now he has to figure out how to use his brains, how to be smart. He accepts his injury and accepts his compromised status in society. Peggy says, "Forget this. I'm Peggy Carter. I'm going to go do something else." I think that's the difference between the two of them. Considering a potential romantic relationship between Sousa and Carter, I think there's definitely a situation where if she hadn't dated Captain America, he might ask her out for a drink. It's like if your new girlfriend dated Ryan Gosling. It's going to make you sweat a bit.
But then again,
I think a lot of the guys in the SSR were former war vets.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah.
Before y'all send hate mail, just say I'm not saying definitely it's not. I'm just saying that for that to happen, Sousa had to have been part of that group that got rescued.
Right. Now, another thought I had, I mean, we've talked about the possibility of Zero Matter being a symbiote.
Yeah.
I'm changing my mind on that, especially since Sony came out and said that they're still going to do a Venom movie.
Yeah.
Even though it's not going to be tied into the MCU, and it's not going to use the current Spider-Man, or the, yeah, Tom Holland.
Mm.
My thought now is Zero Matter
is
Hive, which we are now seeing in the form of a ward.
Yeah.
And that the other realm it goes to is where they find them.
Okay.
That's my thought now, is we've already seen the Zero Matter. We saw it on the on that planet that had had Simmons and Coulson and Ward and all that.
Right. Hmm.
So that's my thought. So I have to see what happens.
Well, you know, we'll see come Tuesday.
Yeah. But to go back to Hollywood ending, the big moments. Remember Howard Stark? He's back in painting form. Of course, this comes to us from the fine folks over at the MCU Exchange. This is a no-brainer. We knew Howard would be back for this finale. How couldn't he?
Right.
Of course, you know, when he pops his head out of the car, Jarvis runs 2-time Oscar nominee Whitney Frost over with. But while his infectious energy and repartee is always a welcome return to the show, it's cool that they finally brought up to the mansion his portraits. So the second big moment is Agent Carter always gets her man. And of course, they're talking here about the, as you mentioned during the recap, you know, the relationship kind of starting with her and Sousa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was some tension there, which always took a backseat. Peggy was never accused of toying with her suitors. Yeah, each show kind of decided to wrap up each story, and it did so with realism and maturity. There was definitely some chemistry between Peggy and Wilkes in the early going, but as he took some dark turns, so did their relationship, allowing other characters to kind of walk into the fray. So, of course, in this episode, Peggy finally made her move with Sousa. The two have had a complicated relationship since they met, and we never quite learned what transpired between them that made him move to L.A. But it's kind of a bummer that Violet had to suffer and all this. But we're glad to see Peggy is happy. The third big moment, Thompson dies, but in the wrong way.
But do we know that he's dead?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
No.
I mean, he's in the rift. Doesn't mean he's gone. Doesn't mean he's dead. He's just not on this planet. So... that's the big moments there.
So the flying car isn't considered a big moment, because I was like, I got to see pre Lola.
Didn't you?
I would consider that a big moment. So that's one we'll add to the list.
That should be honorable mention. That's
yeah.
I mean, and actually, he must have obviously perfected it, because
we see it in First Avenger.
Yeah, he tries that and it fails miserably.
You know? Well, not miserably.
It does fail. It fails.
It fails in a Tucker-like way.
Yes. I mean, that bad boy was floating and ready to go.
Yeah. And I love how they tied back into that.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that was, granted, it was setting up Lola in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, whether it was intended to do so at the time or not. But I think that's a great, it was almost a throwaway bit.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, it was a throwaway bit almost in First Avenger, because it basically was there to introduce Howard Stark.
Right.
That's all it was.
Yeah. I mean, yes, for the longest time, you really didn't, like, you know, you saw little bits and pieces of him in the Iron Man movies, but not really.
Yeah. No. And it's to set up the whole Stark Industries kind of thing and set up, basically bring him in, so when the SSR is, when he's working with the SSR, you don't think anything about it. It's not like, oh, here's our resident tech guy, introduce you guys. No. You know who he is. You know he's like a Howard Hughes. He's like an industrialist tech guy. But it's nice that when you see Lola in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You think back to, well, this is what Stark was working on. And when you see the hovering car here in this finale, well, that just kind of throws back to it as well. Yes. And it's nice to see connections.
It is. And
it's all connected.
Not forced connections either. It just...
No, it's not. It's not forced at all.
No. Because I think when Alfred... oops, sorry.
Wrong franchise, dude. Jarvis.
When Jarvis said something about the floating car, and I'm like, was it floating car? And I'm like, maybe I'm just hearing what I want to hear. And then next thing you know, I was like, okay, well played, sir, well played.
It is.
Yeah. So, what does this mean now for Agent Carter?
Well, I tell you that there is an article on Variety.com written by Maureen Ryan, who is the chief TV critic. She makes a very good argument why there should be a season three. Why it should, or as she puts it, why Marvel's Agent Carter should battle on. Now, she does reference the fact that there is a new president at ABC, Channing Dungey. She says that Dungey has said that she's deeply committed to diversity. Okay. First off, the reasons why that Carter should not be canceled, said this would show that she does truly care about a program that not only showcases a female hero, but also has two female showrunners. Now she's talking about the two executive producers, Tara Butters and Michelle Fizikas. That is a good reason. I think that is because, hey, how many shows do you have out there that have both, really?
Right.
True.
It's an action show. It's not a sitcom. It's not like a crime drama. It's not like a reality show. You can't say it's a superhero movie. It's a spy show.
It is.
That's essentially what it is. Okay. But also, it's also what Agent Carter adds to Disney/ABC. Because it brings value to it. And even if it doesn't show up in broadcast, it needs to carry on somewhere else in the ABC family.
Right.
Or at least somewhere, period. It brings something different to the company's what they call the superhero portfolio. Again, it's not a superhero show, but it has ties to the superhero genre.
Right.
It's something that's lower budget. It's not on a big screen it's not like a big scale like Avengers or Guardians. This is more along the terms of the Netflix stuff. And unlike the Netflix stuff has got dark.
Right.
Which I think is good, but if you're not into dark stuff, it's not for you.
Right. No.
Right.
This, Agent Carter is not dark. It has a light. It has some swagger to it,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't totally take itself seriously. I mean, the words that Marine here use are semi-comedic.
Yeah.
I think that's a good description.
Yeah.
So it really belongs somewhere. I mean, if you're going to put it on Watch ABC or ABC.com or Netflix, it needs to be somewhere because it does... I can't say superhero again. I keep going to that. And I think that's part of the reason why it's important that it needs to stay.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I mean, all these other Marvel endeavors, we'll call them endeavors. You got how many of them have a female frontrunner? One. And that's One. Jessica Jones.
Yep, you're right.
So, I mean, you can argue that Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy, that Black Widow in the Avengers, she's a major character. They're both major characters, but they're not the front runners.
No, they're not. Right.
Same with Pepper in the Iron Man films.
Right.
Pepper was definitely a supporting character.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even consider Pepper in the same breath as Black Widow or Gamora because her role was to be. Yes, she was definitely Tony's equal intellectually and straight character wise, but her role was nowhere near.
She really doesn't come into her own until Iron Man 3, really, right. You think about
right.
it.
Right.
And I'm not downplaying the role of Pepper as it is, but if we're talking about, like you said, female-led Marvel properties, like you said, that there's outside of Jessica Jones, there's Agent Carter, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
Which says a lot, but...
Now, the biggest argument against Agent Carter having a season three is the low ratings. I honestly, from what we've seen, so it's not the show's fault that it has that the ratings aren't there. You know who I put I put ABC squarely at fault in that one,
right?
Because first of all. Well, you can't blame the time slot. That's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. time slot.
Right.
Okay. But what did you see in terms of advertising for this?
Nothing. Virtually nothing. No.
Yeah.
You saw something maybe 2 weeks before it started.
And plus, you really couldn't go anywhere and see, you could go to Hulu and see the entire site, but you see the entire series of season one. But that was it.
Right.
You really had very limited options as to where you could, like, watch the first season of Agent Carter and get caught up to know, you know, to know what's going on. Because otherwise, I mean, Agent Carter didn't go into reruns.
No.
You didn't catch it, then gone. If you didn't catch it and you don't have Hulu, you're hosed. You don't know, and you don't see.
Yeah, because, I mean, it didn't show up on Netflix, I don't think. I don't remember seeing it on Netflix.
I know S.H.I.E.L.D.'s on Netflix.
Yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D. is.
S.H.I.E.L.D. is on Netflix.
I don't think Carter ever came out on Netflix.
And the thing is, I mean, when you look back on season one, you know, we got to see the day-to-day operations of the SSR, which you only got to see bits and pieces of in Captain America, the First Avenger. So right. There's that. And then we get a mini movie, I'll call it, featuring the Howling Commandos. We get to see something specifically featuring the Howling Commandos, and you see that apparently during her time in Europe, she was doing operations with the Howling Commandos as well.
Right.
You know, and so we get to see that she wasn't just a spy in the sense of using her feminine wiles. This woman is a soldier. She's a righteous warrior, and you really don't want to go toe to toe against her. You really don't.
She is tough. She is smart, and she is determined.
She is. And then we get more of that in season two, especially in the beginning of the season. When you see her with her brother in the series premiere or season premiere, and the whole thing, like her brother, with her always being a tomboy, her mom being frustrated that she's not a little lady, and her skills are so good that the special operations executive is wanting to recruit her because her brother, you know, said, hey, this is the person you want. And you realize that that's who she's been all along.
Right.
You know, I think that Agent Carter, for me, it gets to showcase other aspects of the Marvel Universe that if you're not reading the comics, you're going to miss. Like you get to see that the universe is bigger than superheroes and villains and Inhumans. You know that there are everyday people out there that have a big role in that fight against, you know, whoever the big bads of the world are.
Right.
And to me, that's a big thing, because it's one thing to see Thor and Iron Man and Cap, for that matter. It's one thing to see them out there because they're greater than we are.
Yeah.
But to see Nick Fury, to see Agent Carter, to see Sousa, to see Maria Hill fighting those fights. And maybe they have no advanced technology on their side. But, you know, they still using their wits.
Well, it's like the whole tagline of the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was not all heroes are super.
Right.
But, yeah, and here's one other thing that this lady, that she points out. Peggy Carter is a period piece, I say that, and if you're listening, you probably go, well, duh, but you don't really think about it at the time. Mm-hmm. But that's another reason that might make a move to Netflix something, you know, make it a positive, because if you remember, that's kind of how Downton Abbey became a thing.
Right.
Maybe period pieces aren't so good for broadcast TV, but you put it over Netflix, they eat that stuff up.
That's true.
And another comparison that they... that she makes is especially important to have a female lead show in the wake of like Star Wars: The Force Awakens,
right?
Because she makes a comparison to saying that Peggy Carter is not unlike Rey. They are scrappy, they're resourceful, they're thoughtful women that rely more on their wits and bravery than any superpowers. She's a favorite character, and I think it would behoove ABC, it would behoove Disney, it would behoove Marvel to keep this show going, because you've got that strong female character that just don't have much of outside of.
Right.
So, and yes, there is the fact that Hayley Atwell has been signed on to a pilot of a new drama on ABC, but she has come out and said that, yes, ABC has said if there is a season 3, they will totally work it out. Which, of course, that could just be studio pillow talk, just trying to calm the waters. But I'm sure where there's a will, there's a way.
Right.
And she wouldn't be the first person to be working on two series at once.
That's true. I mean, and it's not how like, Stark is.
And it's not like Agent Carter is a full season's worth. So.
True.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean,
all in all, this is a good article with some very good arguments, and I totally agree with them.
Well, speaking of good arguments, we've kind of had arguments go into a gambit of sorts. Just call me the master of transitions.
No.
I know. It's Foxy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my word.
Sure you don't work on the Jungle Cruise?
No, because it's a forest out there.
Oh my gosh.
But Kylan does have some Fox movie news, including Gambit, for us.
Yeah. You know what? Normally I save the best for last. But I'm going to drop this bomb first. Fox has pulled Gambit from their schedule. this was announced. This was announced last week, somewhere around last weekend. It was announced that Fox had confirmed. At first, they pulled it, and it looked, because it was supposed to be, it was scheduled for an October 6th release this year, but the movie hadn't even started filming. So it hasn't started. No, so it got pulled. And it wasn't rescheduled. It was full on removed from their docket. And in its place, the studio has scheduled two untitled Marvel movies for release on October 6th, 2017 and January 12th, 2018. I don't know. I seriously doubt it. I do believe that one of those spaces would probably be for Deadpool 2.
Probably.
The second one, I honestly don't know, because this is guessing here, but we know that at the end of Deadpool that they teased that Cable was going to be in Deadpool 2.
Right.
And if we're getting Cable, I think that means that we can see or we can expect an X-Force movie. I don't think we're going to see New Mutants. I believe it's going to be X-Force. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be one of the traditional lineups that we've seen in the X-Force series. You know, they may do an amalgamation of pulling people from the X universe, but we might see Gambit there. I don't know, but the fact that the movie was pulled all together, I can't lie. It did my heart some good, because I wasn't feeling, you know how I feel.
I keep saying, Lucas Black needs to be the man.
He does, and I would love to see that happen. I don't know, maybe, apparently we got some swagger. Maybe we can put it out there, and then it happens. I don't know. But,
of course we got swagger. We're the Intrepid Trio.
And that's right.
We have swagger like a snail at the Indy 500.
That's a lot of swagger, because I get the feeling that we can do that and get away with it. That's the beauty of it all. I believe that we can do it and get away with it. So, I don't, like I said, I'm 99.876% sure that one of those spots is going to be for Deadpool 2. And, you know, I would like to see the second one be X-Force, but I could be wrong. But there's a lot out there in the X-Universe that they can go with. Oh, heck, we might see an X-Factor movie. I don't know.
Right, yeah. Well, what I can tell you, though, is in 2017, and I only bring this up because it was originally a Marvel property, book-wise, before it came out as a movie, Big Hero 6 is coming to the small screen. there is an animated series coming, and it's going to pick up where the movie left off. So, according to Gary Marsh, Disney Channel's worldwide president, our colleagues at Walt Disney Animation Studios have created a brilliant new world inspired by Marvel with vivid, unique characters. We are thrilled to have the opportunity to further develop these characters into a world-class animated series. According to Disney, Hero will face daunting academic challenges and social trials on campus at San Francisco Institute of Technology, and the team will also protect San Francisco from an array of scientifically enhanced villains. Of course, you know, it's going to have the team of Hero, Baymax, Wasabi, Gogo, Honey Lemon, and Fred. Matt McCorkle and Bob Schooley, who collaborated on Kim Possible, will executive produce the Big Hero 6 series. Late last year, Stan Lee dropped hints at the possibility of a Big Hero 6 sequel in an interview, but it still remains to be seen if a sequel will happen. Because I know in the sequel they were the rumor with the sequel was that Tadashi is possibly still alive. So I think it's great the series is coming out. We're just hoping that means more merchandise, because right now Big Hero 6 merchandise is lacking, and it lacked when the movie came out, despite the fact that it had a decent show at the box office.
Okay, I will confess, I have not seen all of this movie. I have seen parts of it, and the parts that I have seen, I absolutely love. Apparently not enough to where I went back and watched the entire thing, but someday I will.
Well, and I can say that I was pleasantly surprised by the movie. Having been, it was not on my radar to watch, and hanging out with some friends. This one buddy of mine brings it out, and I'm like, well, there's nothing else to do, so sure. And I was pleasantly surprised by it. It's a good movie. It's a fun movie.
It's a great movie.
It made me want to go and find I guess it's considered a manga. It made me want to go back and see if I can find a manga and read that, because I'm one of those people, I kind of have to see this source material and see what the changes are.
Well, let's see. It does appear in Marvel Unlimited.
Well, there you go.
Well, there I go then.
How about that? I mean, just double check. I know it's there, because I think it's in my library. Big Hero 6, 2008-2009. Including the 2008 Big Hero 6 sketchbook.
Well, and one of the many reasons why you should get Marvel Unlimited.
And your author, your writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an unknown guy. Chris Claremont. Oh, Claremont. Chris Claremont. I was waiting for Kylan to go, what?
What?
Chris Claremont wrote this.
Wow.
Two different inkers. Colorist was Emily Warren. Anthony Flamini, I'm assuming, is the artist. So, yeah, all six issues are up now.
There you go.
Or five issues, I'm sorry.
Oh.
So, but I think, you know, we've talked about how Fox is now going to make Wolverine rated R, and possibly X-Men might be rated R, and it's like, do we really need this crap? And the threat, and the question was coming up, is Marvel and Disney going to turn movies rated R?
Well, all right. Not as long as Bob Iger has anything to say about it, because at a recent investor call, he made it clear that Marvel Studios will not be following suit. He says, quote, "We don't have any plans to make R-rated Marvel movies." Now, so far, there have been 12 Marvel Studios films. all of them have been rated PG-13. So basically, the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, movie-wise, it's all been rated PG-13. Deadpool, well, all right, up till Deadpool, R-rated superhero movies really hadn't done that well. You know, you had Warner Brothers doing The Watchmen. It really didn't do as well as expectations when it came out. You had, like, you know, Punisher, and really, it just, they didn't work. Deadpool blew the doors off of all of that. Deadpool has probably made more than all the other R-rated superhero movies put together.
Yeah, because right. I don't think the Blade, like even Blade, for as well as it didn't do that well.
Yeah. And so does it make, you know, does it surprise me that Fox is going, oh, well, we're open to that idea. Grant, you know, never mind the fact they didn't want to make Deadpool to begin with. Am I surprised? No, I'm not surprised. Because Fox sees dollar signs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's yeah. really all they care about. And Warner Brothers, with the DC stuff, they've really just wanted to do that all along because Warner Brothers subscribes to the everything has to be dark and gritty, otherwise we won't print it.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, we've said this before on the show, that works with some characters, but not all.
No.
Right.
If you make Superman dark and gritty, you have messed things up.
Right.
And this is just why I've got a bad feeling about the upcoming Batman Heart Superman. That's it. But we're not talking about that one.
Oh, wait. Can I give the full title that we use over at Weeby Geeks?
Please do.
Please do.
It's Batman Heart Superman, the Flop of Justice.
I don't think it's going to be a flop. It will not be a flop on the scale of Fantastic Flop.
It's not going to be a flop monetarily. But I think it's going to be a flop in the way of it's not going to be as strong of a story as everyone thinks it's going to be.
No.
No, I don't think so.
No.
So I'm just going to set up here and say, good for you, Bob Iger, that you are not falling for that trap. And yes, I did call it, like Admiral Akbar, it's a trap. One of the things that I have enjoyed most about the Marvel Studios films mm-hmm. is being able to go to the theater with my son and enjoy.
It's a trap.
Exactly. We go see Guardians of the Galaxy. We go see Avengers, both Avengers movies.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take him to Doctor Strange. I want to take him to Captain America. It's something just because grown-ups like comics does not mean that you have to make every superhero movie rated R.
No, right. You don't.
Well, I'll tell you, for Guardians, there's a line from Futurama that I would love to have seen in Guardians.
No, I get it. The first rule of Robot Fight Club is you don't talk about Robot Fight Club.
Actually, I think that was from Transformers.
It should have been.
I think that was Transformers.
But well, it's just, to me, there are certain characters that, if you're going to do it properly,
mm-hmm.
need to be rated R. Deadpool yeah. is one of them.
Yes.
Punisher is another.
Yeah.
Lobo would definitely be.
Yeah, definitely.
Wolverine, you can do PG-13. You can do PG. But yes, you can also do R with him.
Right.
That's fine. Do that with them. But don't abandon the PG-13.
No. I think that Marvel Studios got it right when they saw when they hooked up with Netflix. And
yeah.
the thing is, Daredevil and Jessica Jones were both definitely more mature content.
Yes. Yes.
And I think if you're going to do that sort of thing, that's the way to go. I think that the thing is, Marvel has a brand now. They have yes. a brand, and I'm not going to say that it would hurt the Marvel brand to do a rated R movie, because obviously
I will say it. I will say it because, and I'll tell yeah. you why. I'll tell
yeah,
you why.
Yeah, yeah. Tell
because
me why.
How many instances have we seen through social media of parents that took their kid to see Deadpool and wound up having to leave before the opening credits were even
because they can't parent?
But see, we can say that,
right.
And we will be right in saying that if you're you can't just say, oh, it's a Marvel character. Oh, it's a superhero movie. I can take my kid to see. No, there is some amount of parenting homework you have to do.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But having said that, we all know that as a species, we're a pretty stupid bunch.
We are.
Well,
I mean, See, the thing is, when you see Deadpool on Ultimate Spider-Man, he is so watered down.
Yes.
So severely watered down. And if so, if okay, I'm about to sound like that comic guy. I don't mean to, but I'm about to. And if you think you need to do your research, you need to realize that a lot of times, I mean, heck, the Punisher showed up in Spider-Man. Punisher is not really kid friendly. It's
no, he's not.
It's yeah. not. You know, and
just because these characters show up in the animated doesn't mean they're going to be that way in the live action.
No,
sorry.
And here's another thing. I know you've seen it. I know both of you have seen it. This conversation bled over into should Lucasfilm make R-rated Star Wars?
And what did we
saw it as a rationale. They said, well, Disney did it with Deadpool.
And wrong. Disney didn't do it with Deadpool.
Yes, we know. We know that's a stupid head comment. You know what? That is a lazy comment. That is an ignorant comment because we know that Disney did not do it. First of all, it's Marvel doing the movies, not Disney. Second of all, Fox,
has the license,
not Marvel. Yeah. Did this movie.
This ranks up there with, you know, if David Gruhl shaves off his facial hair, he'll look like the drummer from Nirvana. Hello. It is the drummer from Nirvana.
Dude, I'm using that as an argument.
But at this point, yes, Marvel has come up with a brand. They have created a brand. And people know that Marvel is under the Disney umbrella.
Yes.
Right.
They're gonna have to put up with this crap regardless.
Right.
Do not confuse the issue any further by making your own R-rated movie. There's also you are alienating a good portion of your audience when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, as we've said before, Wolverine's going to be that way. It's going to be alienated.
My son has said, you know, I wish I could go see Deadpool. I said, son, you know very well, I'm not taking you to see Deadpool. Deadpool will exist for years and years and years on DVD and Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
At such a point, when you get older, it will still be there.
Yes.
He could go check it out from Blockbuster. Oops. Nope.
Well, you know, okay, case in point, Conan. When Conan came out, Conan was a Marvel. It's not a Marvel movie, but...
No, it was not a Marvel movie, but it had been a Marvel comic.
Right. And you know, and the thing was, like, I was familiar with Conan because of the Marvel comic. But, okay, now true, my grandmother was asleep, I was up late, and I managed to watch it probably younger age than I should have.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, if my mom had a say in it, I would have been much older before watching Conan.
Oh,
and it doesn't matter that it was a comic book. You know?
We were in high school, Friday nights, Saturday nights, parents mm-hmm. go to bed, we stay up. Oh, there's a lot of stuff that we all watched.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
That chances are our parents knew about.
Yeah, I love Three Stooges, man. That Three Stooges.
Just didn't say a word.
Well, you're not talking about Three Stooges, are you?
Oh, believe me.
Not quite those Three Stooges, no.
Three Stooges or Tales from the Dark Side or Monsters. All those shows were on the Flashback channel, just in case.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, but I'm saying.
I know what you're talking about now. I remember.
So, yeah, that's really all I got to say about that part. It's just, yes, I am glad that Marvel Studios will not be making rated R. They've got 5,000 characters.
Yes.
You tell me that you can't find somebody else to make a good story that you don't have to delve into rated R.
I think if they were going to, the two realms that they would do rated R would be Blade and Punisher. And realistically, give those characters Netflix shows.
Yes.
And you make them dark like Daredevil and like Jessica Jones. They don't ever need to hit the big screen except in bit parts in like Infinity War or something else.
Right. Yeah.
Point blank.
That's it.
And I would be happy with that.
If you're going to do rated R, put it on Netflix. Very, yes, I agree.
And I'm right there with you. I think that that's where we need to see.
That's where
Ghost Rider.
Ghost
Rider would be the same one. Yep. In a sense, anything that would have been Marvel Max is Marvel Netflix. As I do air quotes for whatever reason.
Yes, because somebody listening to this show could so totally see you do the air.
Can you see this?
Do you think that we will get Fury? Do you think that we will ever get Fury?
No.
The Marvel Max. Oh, I love that Marvel Max series. Oh.
I don't think so. So, yeah, that's our thoughts. But for thoughts, that means it's that time of the week, that time in the show. Kylan, why don't you give us our book of the month? And it's all of a sudden I start hitting crazy radio show guy.
Well, you know, I said
please
there,
give it to us before he continues.
What okay. has Fury done to the air in the secret lair?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, here's the thing. I was talking to my wife, and I was like, well,
that was your first mistake.
Well,
sorry. We were all thinking it. I just said it.
Question is, does she listen?
Yes, so she's going to jump me that's for laughing at that.
That's her mistake.
All right, so I had two directions to go with this. I took the third. And in light of season two of Daredevil coming out in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, something like that, I decided to go with Amazing Spider-Man, number 129, the first appearance of the Punisher.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
All right, so the writer is Jerry Conway, and the penciler is Ross Andrew. The inkers are David Hunt, John Romita Jr., and Frank Giacola.
Romita Jr. was just on Comic Book Man.
He was?
Yes, this past week's episode.
You know, and I'm so behind on that show right now. It's not even funny. And a penciler on the cover is Gil Kane. So you had some greats working on this book. And so this is my pick for the book of the month. It came out February 10th, 1974. So Punisher has been around with us a long, long time. And this version of him is complete with the white go-go boots.
Yeah, the original look. I love that.
The original look. It was either going to be this or I was going to go with Punisher, the first issue where Punisher and Daredevil meet. But I decided to go with the first. Let's give everybody a basis, like an introduction to the character.
Now, so. I got to ask a question, though.
Uh-huh.
Wait, when Punisher runs into Daredevil for the first time in that in Punisher number one, does he pull a John Cena?
You're not even funny. You're not here. See, the thing is, Matt can still kind of sense it. I think. I don't know. Oh my god. Oh.
And before we start getting the hate mail on iTunes in our iTunes reviews, we have never said that we're going to be an NPR style, very serious, the Marvel type show. We're here to have fun. We're here to crack up. If we get a little juvenile at times, we get a little juvenile at times. This is why we do the show, is to have fun and have you guys have fun and go, did he really say that?
Yes, he did. Oh my god.
Because I'll take it one step further. Could you imagine Punisher going, Daredevil, you can't see me.
No.
Oh my god. Oh,
that's from the Marvel Assisted Living line.
Oh, no, wait, I have a question. Now, 42. Apparently, years and years ago, I forget whoever, it may have been Joe Quesada who said this, but he said that Frank Castle will always be, I guess, Frank Castle will never, now some heroes kind of, they said basically they're in there somewhere between their late 20s to mid to late 30s, but that Frank Castle is he actually ages normal age. So at this point, Frank Castle should probably be, mid to late 60s? So do you think that's still the case, or do you think that they're actually going to... I know that in the Daredevil that he obviously is not, but right. Do you think... is Marvel still holding to that rule for the Punisher or no?
In the books, maybe.
No, because, I mean, with his roots being coming out of Vietnam, you know.
Right.
That's something, but, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, but they kind of already broke that mold, though, with Magneto.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have slower aging, but, I mean, he's up there.
Yeah,
And, of course, we're talking about a man who is a Holocaust survivor.
Yep. So, I don't know, but then, you know, they'll have something happen, and all of a sudden he lost, or he gained 30 years. You're like, how the heck did that happen?
Yeah.
Although, I don't want to gain 30 years, then I'll be like a teenager again. I don't want to, but just saying. Although, teenage me with the knowledge I have now.
That's dangerous.
That's like the making of a supervillain. No.
Yeah.
Or a millionaire.
Or a millionaire.
Or his both. Wife. Oh, wait.
Oh, my Sorry. God. No, you're not.
On that note, it is definitely that time. It is our new comic book picks for March 9th, 2016, and Gilligan's still on that island. Eric, how about you start us off this week?
Okay. I've got my standard three picks. One of them I'm going to wait till absolute last. So I'm going to start off in reverse order. My first one is the highest number of the week. It is a number four. It is Red Wolf number four, written by Nathan Edmondson. It said, desert predators emerge from the shadows. Without Sheriff Knight, Red Wolf and the town of Santa Rosa are exposed to the circling vultures. Dun, dun, dun. And Bly is getting bolder. The compulsive crime boss's identity is revealed. Red will need new allies if he's ever getting back to his world. Kylan, what about yours, bud?
My number one is a number six. Doctor Strange number six. The writer is Jason Aaron. Penciler is Chris Bacalo. And the cover artist is Chris Bacalo. The last days of magic starts now. The empirical have arrived, leaving universes purged of magic in their wake. Their next target, the Marvel Universe. And with Doctor Strange weakened beyond measure, we don't have a chance.
Well, okie dokie. That sounds familiar. I think we picked that in one already earlier week. But you know what? I figure if they push it back, then it's still fair game.
There you go.
Yeah, like C-3PO one shot?
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
C-3PO. Sure. Well, my first pick of the week, unfortunately, is the last book, and is the last issue in that series. So let's have a moment of silence. Okay, that's it. Black Knight, number five. The Ebony Blade may be out of sight, but that doesn't mean it's out of mind. Can Dane live a life unaffected by the sword, or will fate step in? Find out here. Of course, this is written by Frank Thierry, and the penciler is Luca Pizzari.
Okay. Well, my second pick of the week is a number three. It is Rocket Raccoon and Groot number three, written by Scotty Young. And hey, he's also the cover artist. Friends Forever, the horrible truth of Rocket's dastardly transformation revealed. Oh, man, that answer only raises more questions. But don't worry, all will be revealed. Probably. Well, there's a very good chance most things will be revealed. Can the greatest friendship in the galaxy survive this terrifying trial? I'd say yes, probably. But really, isn't it the journey more than the destination? Come journey with us, friends.
Oh man. How can I follow that?
You can try.
With your number two pick. That's well, how
my,
you follow.
My number two is a number three. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number three. The writer is Mark Guggenheim. Penciler is Garmin Peralta. And the cover artist is Mike Norton. A standoff tie-in. What is the secret of Classified? And how will it change the Marvel Universe as we know it? Find out in this tie-in to Standoff. Plus, Fitz falls out of a plane without a parachute. And the world's most unexpected Wolverine cameo.
Okay. Well, it only makes sense because Simmons jumped out of an airplane without a parachute on the show. I guess it's Fitz's turn.
Yeah, maybe he learned a trick or two from Cap, you know? Because Cap does that in Winter Soldier, so.
Yeah.
Does he have a parachute? He doesn't need one. Well, I think, what was the highest number so far, issue-wise?
Six.
And looking back at the list, is that at y'all's list, is six the highest number y'all have?
Well, let's see. Hang on, see here. Dude, where is my list here? Oh, here's my list.
Page two.
Yeah, page 2. So far, it's been number 6, with Kylan doing Doctor Strange number 6. That was his first pick.
I'm going this week with Uncanny Avengers number 7.
Well,
you're having to undo him. Outdo him.
Whatever. writer is Jerry Duggan. Penciler is Ryan Stegman. A standoff tie-in. Avengers standoff. I think I called it last week as well with Pleasant Hill. Right. I am seriously considering. This is going to be one of those. I'm picking the issues because this crossover and tie-ins for this has me interested. But I think I'm going to wait for the trade paperback or the collective volumes.
That's a good idea.
And I know I'm usually, I want the digital copy too, but this is one of those. I almost wish if I'm paying the money for the trade paperbacks, I want the digital code in that so I could get the collective volume on Comicology or in the Marvel app as well. If you're listening, Marvel, make it so.
Well, there you go.
A standoff tie-in. The Uncanny Avengers come to the aid of S.H.I.E.L.D. during a manhunt. The team makes a shocking discovery about an ally. What does it all have to do with the mysterious unfolding in Pleasant Hill? And I'm curious if this is going to potentially lead to a Ghost Rider return.
That's very possible.
So, with the way the covers have been portraying Pleasant Hill, I'm wondering. And I love how on Marvel's site, see variant covers, image not available.
Yeah,
I know.
So, our final picks of the week.
Our final picks of the week. I have been waiting for a while to pick this one.
Hold on. I gotta help you out.
Please do.
Where did I put it? There we go.
Gotta set a little mood music this one.
As it's looping. As I'm stuck in it. I hit it, it starts to play, and then my soundboard says, not responding.
Dude, you could almost put that as a dance beat.
That's true.
But without further ado, welcome, foolish mortals, to the Haunted Mansion. Haunted Mansion number 1. With writer Joshua Williams. Penciler Jorge Manuel Carioca Coelho. With Ian Gist as the cover artist. It seems that no one lives in the elegant mansion on the hill. But then where's that creepy organ music coming from? Are the iron gates meant to keep people out? Or something's in? Get ready to meet the 999 happy haunts of the Haunted Mansion. But be warned, they're looking for the 1,000. The delightfully chilling Disney attraction comes to afterlife in an all-new story. Don't miss the next great Disney Kingdom's adventure and the most spine-tingling experience you'll find this side of a doom buggy. Okay, I'm good.
Okay. That's almost ringing up there with the other classics we've had.
There it is.
Hang on to them hats and glasses, because this here's the wildest ride in the
And that is out in hardcover, actually.
Cool.
$25. And if you don't know what I'm talking about...
Yes, that's what I'm waiting on.
It'd be Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. So, Kylan, your last pick of the week.
My last pick of the week is a number one, actually. Mockingbird number 1. And the writer is Chelsea Kane. Because you demanded it, now in her own ongoing series, Bobby Morse is Mockingbird, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s most versatile, most in-demand agent. But a string of bad missions gone wrong indicate that something is strange. Something strange is lurking within S.H.I.E.L.D.'s own medical and recovery network. How far will Mockingbird have to go in order to solve this puzzle box and get to the truth? Best-selling author Chelsea Kane teams with newcomer Kate Nemecik.
We'll have to see about getting Kate on the show then.
Yes.
And who comes to Mockingbird's help? But that'd be my pick, my final pick.
Uh-huh.
That would be Howard the Duck number 5. The epic conclusion. A cosmic battle to end all battles with Howard in the middle. Can he put an end to the Collector once and for all with the help of the Guardians of the Galaxy? And I could have sworn I've read this before.
You might have.
You might have. They might have pushed something back.
Which it wouldn't be the first time.
No. And I bet you this was my pick last 2 weeks ago.
May have been. Because we all know things are getting pushed back from time to time.
Yeah. Because I remember reading the line and I'm on page 12 of the script. So I don't know. Something's fishy in the land of weird world. Mm-hmm. See what I did there?
I do. Let's see. It's all connected, right?
It is all connected. So before we go, usually I know I say I ask for final thoughts. How about this for breaking news? Per Atwell's own admission, fans might not learn the fate of Peggy and her adventures until the ABC upfronts, which will be in May. But it is, from Haley Atwell herself, ABC has assured me that it would actually be possible if both shows get picked up for me to do both. So by saying yes to the pilot of Conviction does not automatically say that that's it for Peggy and Jarvis at all. It just means that they've had a show that they liked me to do, and there's a possibility to do both at some point. And she continues on. There's a balance with how it ends. There's enough of a cliffhanger to suggest that that's where we'll go forward if the show gets picked up again, but things are nicely wrapped up in a way that I think the audience will find very satisfying. No, not when you end on a cliffhanger.
Exactly. Sorry.
The audience won't feel frustrated. If anything, they'll come away satisfied, but also curious as to what happens beyond, because thanks to the Marvel films she has appeared in, we know that Peggy's life goes on, and she lives quite an extraordinary life and a long life. So there's always room to revisit her in different ways, different decades, and different ages. Do we flash forward to the 50s, or maybe even 60s, and we find a young Hank Pym? So yeah, that's breaking there. That Haley Atwell is saying that there's a chance that it could still happen. I still say, you know, if she's going to be involved in Conviction and they want to do Agent Carter, move it to the summer and bring in Secret Warriors as a summer show as well. And then you could keep it going for the Marvel themes throughout the whole year with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Most Wanted. And then we got Damage Control coming in at some point as well.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
So that's going to wrap it up for this week. We are the Intrepid Trio. So from...
Oh, Kylan.
And Eric.
And Mike. Jarvis, if you would, please.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Nope, just time to go dark. So, I mean, what do you think ABC should do with Agent Carter?
Keep it going.
Okay, you know, we need to see the early days of S.H.I.E.L.D. We need to see that. So, keep it going.
Yeah, I think we need to get to that point. And if you're not going to do Agent Carter, again, you know, like we've talked about here before, we definitely need to hit Sergeant Fury in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
We do.
Or Nick Fury in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Seriously. Or Nick Fury of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, one of the early, like the Steranko stuff.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Let's hit the Nick Fury in the Steranko years with the 60s, early 70s.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So.
I would love that.
Away we go. Fade was a little quick, a little more than I was expecting.
A little bit.
Welcome to the backup story for this week. Wow, 2 weeks in a row, except last week's was book club. we had like three more stories that we just didn't have room for over on the Sorcerer Radio part of the show that we're going to throw at you tonight in this backstory for the podcast side of things. And the first story is going to that we thought was kind of intriguing. Last time we saw Fant, this is going to be about Agent Carter. I mean, not Agent Carter. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Different
We've
agent.
Been talking Carter all night. Last time we saw director Phil Coulson, he brutally murdered a Grant Ward.
Do we consider that murder, though? I don't
consider it murder either.
I might consider it murder, but I would definitely say it might have been justified in their particular realm.
I would not call it, it definitely justified. I would not call it murder because they were fighting.
Yes, that is true.
And if you think that Ward would have stopped short of killing Coulson, you're nuts.
Yeah,
because Ward would end him in the blink of an eye. Not even think twice about it.
Well, but come on, guys. I mean, Coulson did try and lend Ward a hand.
Oh.
Yeah. I like to think he gave him the finger.
I gave him more.
4 fingers and a thumb.
Yeah.
He definitely put some elbow grease into it.
You might say he even had a crush on him. Just a little something you get off your chest.
Oh.
Yeah. But Coulson was just ribbing with him.
I get the feeling he did with the heavy heart.
You crack me up.
Anyhow, so Clark Gregg is now forced to consider how that moment has changed Coulson. According to Gregg, as he talks to TV Guide, I don't think he comes back with an easy answer. I think in the moment it felt like the only course of action possible to him. I don't think he's going to know for some time if it was a terrible mistake that changes him or maybe turns him into a supervillain. It becomes really a show about a team run by a supervillain or not.
See, I think that he's just trying to sell us. Coulson has always been a good man.
Right.
He's willing to make the hard choices, but that doesn't mean he's not a good man.
Yeah.
Greg goes on to clarify that that long stare he shares with Fitz after their return from Maveth doesn't necessarily indicate any kind of ill will towards his teammate. Because I don't think there's any malice towards Fitz. He just didn't care too much about anything in the moment, and that's a dark place that Fitz saw him in, and that's a dark place that he goes back to his team in. So, obviously, Coulson's album of choice, if he's listening to any records, is not Dark Side of the Moon. Dark Side of Maveth, maybe, but that's by an entirely different group called Fuchsia Earl.
Fuchsia Earl. Again, are you sure that you don't work for the Jungle Cruise?
Fuchsia Earl.
Why? Because it's a jungle out there?
Jungle in here, that's for sure.
Oh.
So
you see, it's funny because
it's true.
And if you believe that, we can show you the backside of water.
I still don't hold with the idea of Coulson turning to the dark side, for lack of a better term. Now, you know, Fitz and Coulson has to have a meeting, mm-hmm. just the two of them, a private meeting. It's kind of like, Fitz, step into my office kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if Coulson doesn't call it, Fitz definitely needs to come up to him, because Coulson saw Fitz shooting her boyfriend. So, you know, there's the question of, well, yes, Coulson killed Ward, Fitz killed off the competition.
Yeah.
So they just kind of need to compare notes. And if Coulson, if I were Fitz, if Coulson did not say, hey, I need to see you in my office, I would be the one going to him and say, look, it's not what you think you saw.
Yeah.
Which is the thing you say when it is what you think you saw.
But, exactly.
But here's my question, though. Making Coulson a supervillain and having S.H.I.E.L.D. at the moment run by a supervillain, does that bring Fury back out of hiding and bring Sam Jackson to the TV series full-time for maybe a season?
I don't think so.
But how fun would that be?
That would be, but really...
You know, Sam Jackson loves playing Nick Fury.
He does, and there are few people who just seem to be... born for that role.
Hmm.
I mean, born for their certain role. And this speaks to the successful casting that Marvel Studios has done. Because you figure, all right, who else would you have play Tony Stark other than Robert Downey Jr.? Who else would you choose to play Captain America other than Chris Evans? Who else would you have play, you know, Gamora, I'm thinking of the giant turtle from the Japanese monster movies. Gamora other than Zoe Saldana.
Right.
You have all these characters that are so perfectly cast. Mm-hmm. And Nick Fury and Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury is one of those characters.
The only way I would go a different person as Nick Fury is if it's a younger Fury.
Flashback Fury. Yes.
Or even the earlier, you know, the show that we talked about that would be set in the, you know, beginning of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So
that's I think it'd be interesting to see Coulson go bad. And maybe not the same way as Ward, but definitely be that anti-hero.
Well, right. If you remember, the agent that was being controlled by the camera eye in like the first few episodes, you know, she looked at one of the others, I think it was May, and said, "What did y'all do to him? He is different."
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wonder, well, was Coulson really that much of a hard case?
Yeah.
Because over the course of this season and the season before, you've seen Coulson, you thought you saw the softer side of Coulson.
Yeah.
You did, but you also saw hints that he could be far more ruthless. I don't know if that's a good word or not.
Cold hearted.
You saw an edge to him.
Yeah.
At times.
Yeah.
And so it makes you wonder, you know, how much of that edge was there before the Tahiti thing.
True.
Very true.
If you want to go back to a slightly harder edged Coulson, I'm good with that. But let's not make him evil. He's been like the everyman character.
Mm-hmm.
He's been such an emotional anchor to all of us, to the Avengers. You know, I don't want to say to Iron Man, but to a lesser extent, to Captain America, to
Thor,
to Agents of even Thor.
Yeah.
You don't take him to the dark side.
No.
Yes, it'd be interesting, but it wouldn't be good. Interesting.
No.
I tell you what is interesting though. Guys, you may have already found this out. You may already know this, but March is Women's History Month. Last month we had Black History Month. This month is Women's History Month. And Marvel is definitely tying into that. They announced via Entertainment Weekly that yesterday marked, of course, we are taping this on March the 4th, so this would have been March the 3rd, marked the beginning of Marvel's Women of Power event. Now, this is an initiative that will see the debut of new characters and content in all of their mobile, console, handheld, and PC games. Bill Roseman, who is the creative director of Marvel Games, told Entertainment Weekly, quote, "Across our portfolio, we're going to launch over a dozen new female characters in all of our different games, as well as the in-game story events. Lego Marvel's Avengers will see Moonstone, Captain Marvel, and Pound Cakes added to the game. Pound Cakes.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel Contest of Champions gets Ms. Marvel, She-Hulk, and X-23. Marvel Future Fight is getting Proxima Midnight,
which I can tell you has not debuted yet.
No.
Well, they just said that March the 3rd was the start, so this will probably happen over the course of the month.
Probably over the weekend.
Yeah. In Spider-Man Unlimited, you've got Silk and other Spider-Women. Marvel Heroes 2016 gets Rescue added in.
Oh, okay.
And you've also got Avengers Academy adding in more female heroes. And Marvel Puzzle West will add Women of Power variants to its gameplay.
Okay. Now, I will say, Future Fight, there's a good number of women already in the game.
Oh, yeah. That's why we're only getting one more.
I mean, you've got Silk, you've got Spider-Gwen, you've got Sister Grimm, Nebula, Gamora,
Jessica Jones,
Daisy,
She-Hulk,
Daisy,
Black Widow, Thor,
Sharon Carter,
and that would be the Jane Thor,
yes.
What is it? Begins with an S.
Silk?
No. Starry one.
Silk is already there.
Right. I gotta look it up. She's the starry. I want to say almost like it's not Syndicate.
Sif.
Lady Sif.
Yeah.
Oh, who is it?
Spiral? No.
No.
Y'all have played this more than I have, so I don't have all the characters unlocked.
You have Miss Marvel, which is Captain Marvel. I have the game open. We said Sister Grimm, Jessica Jones, Singularity.
Singularity. Singularity. There you go. Okay.
Mockingbird, Black Cat.
Yes.
Bobby Morse. Mm-hmm. And there are two different characters.
Yeah. Yep. Mockingbird. Well, they're two different costumes for the same character.
Right.
Isn't there a Bobby? I thought there was a Bobby Morris.
No, it's costume.
Okay, it's a costume.
It's a costume, yeah.
It's Mockingbird in a costume for Bobby.
Okay.
But anyway, Marvel's director of content and character development is a lady by the name of Sana Amanant.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how you pronounce that last name. She said that the Women of Power initiative came about as a way to highlight characters that the audience might not be familiar with. She says, quote, "We're trying to find unique ways to do that in a way that is more about showcasing and celebrate these characters more than anything else. For us, we've been doing the Women of Marvel variants for quite some time, so this time we thought we'd put a little spin on it with Women of Power. There is very much the idea here that a lot of these characters can transcend their current roles. For me, I'm looking at the possibilities that exist, and I know that it's just a matter of time before it starts growing into our other divisions. But we also want to make sure that we are cultivating a mission for the growth of these characters in a way that's realistic and authentic, and it's really more about having the Marvel Universe expand and grow and educating our fans and new audiences about the treasure chest of characters that exist that they might not traditionally know of as we start expanding them in different areas. Now, this event is going to coincide with the quote-unquote Women of Power Marvel Comics variant cover initiative, which is going to include 25 covers featuring Marvel's female heroes.
Wow. The other two, also Bloodstone and Angela.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to forget about Angela. I really do.
Angela's not the character I thought she would be in the game.
Mm-mm. I'm just not a big fan. I've said it.
Yeah. So, that only brings us one more kind of rumor mill type story.
Yeah, rumor mill.
Crank up the rumor mill.
And one of the rumors kind of makes Kylan sound like a freaking genius.
It really does because I called this. Yes. Okay, it looks like now this is a rumor.
Rumor.
Netflix is rumored to be casting Shang-Chi. Yes, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, Shang-Chi, for Marvel's Iron Fist series.
The son of Fu Manchu.
The son of Fu Manchu himself.
The master of Kung Fu.
Which is why, and I believe I said it on the show, and I definitely said it on, in my blog and on my Geek Watch One, that we know that people were pushing for Marvel to go with an alternative choice in her casting of Danny Rand,
right.
and we talked about that, and one of the reasons why I said that they probably went with their traditional choice is that they may be looking to cast Shang-Chi down the road. And
I believe you said that here, because I won't say I remember you saying it.
We said Shang-Chi has to be Chinese.
Yes.
Has to be. And what do we have? And I know it's a rumor, but Hashtag Show is the very same show that it's first rumored and then confirmed the whole Danny Rand casting news. So that's the same show that broke that news. So does that mean that they know something that we don't? I don't know. Like I said, this could all just be rumors. But it's a big rumor, and it really opens the world, because the other side of Shang-Chi is that he delves into the other side of the spy world in the Marvel Universe, because he ends up working with MI6 a lot. And MI6 is definitely more dirty trick spy stuff than what you get with S.H.I.E.L.D. Because S.H.I.E.L.D. plays with the superheroes a lot. But if you want your more traditional spy stories, something that's more along the lines because of what you get with Agent Carter. That's what you get with a lot of the Shang-Chi's Master of Kung Fu stuff. So right. I'm jazzed about that. We'll keep our eyes and ears open and see if there's if this rumor is going to hold any water. Now, to stay in the Marvel Universe, but to hop from TV to movies, Sylvester Stallone has been rumored to join the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
As what? Bucky O'Hare?
I don't know. It said
Dominic Fortune?
No, we already have a Dominic Fortune.
Yeah, but he'd make a cool one, though, wouldn't he?
He really would.
Only if he could get the voice right.
Oh, I am not gonna.
I'm not going there. I want to keep Eric's mind clean.
I was a little late for that, but go ahead.
Supposedly, Sylvester Stallone was caught on camera Friday heading to the set of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. He's pictured holding a script, likely evidence of a role in the sequel to the blockbuster film. So, I don't know.
It's circumstantial. To you know, make no mistake, it is all circumstantial evidence.
Oh, here's more. There's more to this. Apparently, he was spotted leaving in the Atlanta hotel where the movie's cast stays, and he got into a car usually assigned to Chris Pratt.
Mm.
So let's see. Let's play that game. Who would Stallone be playing? Is he going to be Peter Quill's dad? Although I'm kind of already like, I hope not.
I thought Kurt Russell was supposed to be playing his dad.
Thought so too.
Yeah. And see, that's the assumption. But you know, there's a lot that we don't know about Guardians 2. So, or maybe he'll be a new Guardian. That's less likely, but we don't know. So,
could you imagine going from I am the law to Marvel's law keeper as Nova?
Oh.
No.
I don't want it, but...
I'm going to say no, mainly right? Because if you're talking either Sam or Richard, was it Sam Alexander and Richard Rider, both very much young. Now, if you wanted, like, Century, who was Nova, but he was in the Nova Corps as well, but he was an older version.
Right. Centurion wouldn't be a bad idea.
No, he would.
And he's in Squadron Supreme, and that is MCU.
Yeah, true.
So that's a possibility, and the man's still in good shape. I mean, he could definitely pull that off.
And we already know that we're not getting Nova in this movie.
Right. Well, Centurion wouldn't be a bad choice.
Centurion would be a good choice because he has the same powers as Nova.
Mm-hmm.
Or here's a thought. What if he was Rom Space Knight?
No, it's not going to happen. Because Hasbro's going to have Rom.
Yeah.
Because Hasbro has the license. Rom was a licensed title. That was under the Epic line, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the creator-owned stuff. But Adam Warlock?
Would you want to see Sylvester Stallone as Adam Warlock? No, I'm not saying that's a bad casting idea. I'm not saying you're just crazy talking here.
No, I probably am crazy talking here, but...
But, you know, Adam Warlock would not be... He's kind of got that face, though.
Adam Warlock, Stallone.
Now, he's a little old for Warlock. I mean, the guy's knocking on 70.
But remember... The comics or in the movies, just because he's younger in the comics doesn't mean he can't be older in the movie.
No, I'm saying Adam Warlock has a little bit more youthful look.
Well, and yeah, he would be probably too because he just broke out of the cocoon.
Yeah, but I mean, good grief, they made Ian Holm look a whole lot younger in Lord of the Rings when he picked up the ring.
True, very true.
And with makeup, buddy, it could happen.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, they did a decent makeup job on him in Expendables 3.
Well, why not?
You know?
Yeah. Just the only thing I still go back to: do we potentially see Bucky O'Hare, and could he be doing the voice of Bucky while what's his name is doing the voice of Rocket?
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper, yeah. That could Stallone could be an interesting Bucky.
That's true.
If you're going to have Stallone in for just voice talent, there's no telling who he could be.
That's right. True.
Yeah. And that's what makes it interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I wonder if IMDb says anything about Stallone or Guardians 2 in general.
Let's see.
Okay. Stars. Elizabeth Debicki. No name. No character name. But didn't we say she might be, began with an M? Mantis?
Mantis.
No, yeah. Mantis is actually Palm Clementeef. Kurt Russell, and there's no character name next to him. Michael Roker's back. Sean Gunn is back, or is in it as Craig.
Well, of course, Sean Gunn, you know he's going to be in it. Michael Rooker, you know, James Gunn is trying to find a way to get Michael Rooker into any of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Sullivan's listed. Glenn Close is back as Nova Prime. And
And
there's no mention of Stallone.
Mm.
How about John C. Reilly? Is he back?
Does not say.
Dang, I want Wreck-It Ralph back.
So I'm curious if we go to Guardians of the Galaxy and look up their characters from Wikipedia.
Well, all right. First of all, this rumor only came up today.
True.
So you're not likely to find a whole lot of information on it.
But it's the internet. It's Jarvis.
Fine. Task him with look for it. We'll come back next week.
So as we put Jarvis on that task, let's okay, wait, here we go. I'm found something. Agent Venom, maybe. Okay, according to Wikipedia, here's the list of current members: Agent Venom, Drax, Gamora, Groot, Peter Quill, Rocket Raccoon, Star-Lord (parentheses Kitty Pryde), and yes. Thing. Former members: Angela, Bug, Captain Marvel, Cosmo, Iron Man, Mantis, Mater, Moondragon, Adam Warlock, but I think the other two, Jack Flag or Major Victory.
It would not be, I don't think it would be Major Victory.
Okay.
I don't think it would be Major Victory, because Major Victory is Vance Astro.
Right.
He is the one that basically, he's a man from 20th century Earth. The original Guardians of the Galaxy story came in like the 30th century.
Mm-hmm.
So basically he's a man from 1,000 years in the past. Now, I'm not going to rule it out, because that could happen. Jack Flag might be a better bet.
I think Flag's a better bet, yeah.
Yeah, Flag's a better bet. I still like the idea of Guardians.
Well, if they use Stallone as Jack Flag, and they're talking about doing a Thunderbolts movie,
mm-hmm.
then he could cross over from Guardians to Thunderbolts.
Yeah, he could.
So, but before we get too far more into this backstory, I'm going to say that might wrap it up for us this week. Any final thoughts before we go?
No, I think we covered everything pretty well.
I think we did. It's a chock full issue, so I think people are going to like what they got and then some.
And remember, we do encourage listener participation. Hit us up on Twitter or on Facebook. Email at mmg@weebiegeeks.net. Let us know your picks of the week. If you have an unlimited pick you think we should touch on, hit us up with that too. Comments, questions, whatever. We're here for you. So, until next time, this is the Intrepid Trio of the Mighty Marvel Geeks, and we're signing out.